Astro Magazine, Rod Pyle.
Hi, Rod. How are you?
I'm good. You know, I rarely in life get to feel so profound as when I hear your opening, and it always lifts my spirits. And then I go back to just being a normal me.
Well, you know,
whatever that is.
Well, we've always enjoy having you coming on, and you know, I've been trying to figure out different ways to introduce you with different whatever. And it suddenly occurred to me today, hey, you know what? I've never used the theme from 2001: A Space Odyssey to bring Rod on. Bump, 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 bump.
It kind of makes me want to start, you know, beating something with a bone and toss it in the air, which is not the shot most people remember, but that was it, man.
Well, that was one of the great shots in that movie. The bone goes up in the air, and then it turns into a space station, right?
You know, I have to tell you, I think it was 12 years ago or so, they re-released that in movie theaters. And, you know, in 65 millimeter, this is probably close to 18 years ago, I think of it, in 65 millimeter projected film. And those effects held up just as well as they did back in the day against modern stuff. I was just amazed.
I've always thought that. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. The effects in 2001 Space Odyssey, considering how long ago it was made, and you take a look at any other film of that era and special effects that are in those other movies, they're like child's play compared to this. I mean, I don't know how they did it because it's not CGI because that didn't exist when they made the movie. But incredible.
Those physical models and cameras green screen, and they did it the hard way. And even in the 90s, you know, we were doing Trek, it was still doing it the hard way, but that work didn't look anything like what they did in 2001. That's just, you know, because you've got that huge screen, and people are critical, man. They may not know exactly what's wrong, but they know something's wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like if the sound's bad.
All right. So NASA's dark asteroid impact mission will be a key test of planetary defense.
They actually have an office at NASA called the Planetary Defense Coordination Office.
Wow.
Which that job opened up twice in the last 5 years. And I thought, you know, if I had a PhD, just because it'd be cool to be able to wear black sunglasses all the time. But so this was launched in 2001. It was launched last year. It's called DART, the Double Asteroid Redirection Test. And the idea is that, you know, someday we're going to see a big rock hurtling towards Earth, hopefully in advance, and go, uh-oh, just like all those movies you and I have seen.
Yep.
This is bad. It could, depending on the size, you know, if it's a half mile wide, it's a city or county killer. If it's much bigger, sorry, not a half mile wide. What am I saying? It's 500 feet wide. It's a city or county killer. If it gets much bigger, you got real problems. You start getting crop die-offs and all that. So we want to try and intervene in some way. And so as a very small test, DART, which is about a 1,200-pound spacecraft, on Monday evening, 6:15 your time, is going to, live on television, slam into an asteroid. And then we're going to measure with Earth-based telescopes how much of a difference it makes in that asteroid's orbit. So the actual asteroid it's heading towards is called Didymos, and it's large. It's a few thousand feet wide. But there's a little moonlet circling it called Dimorphos, which is about 500 feet wide. So as NASA put it, it's a bit like running a golf cart into the Great Pyramid. But even though it's small, because of the speeds involved, about 2 million pounds of rock and junk is going to get thrown up in the air. And it should divert the thing if you hit it at the right angle off of its orbit.
Now, wait. So, how in the world is that going to be televised? I mean, is
the... Well, because the probe has one instrument called Draco. And it's a camera. And other than the AI that's going to steer it for the last 4 hours, the camera is all it's carrying, and it's staring right at where it's headed for. So we're going to see that thing get closer and closer and closer and closer and closer. And wham! So it's pretty darn neat.
When is that? What time is that? So I guess I'm going to be on the air when that happens. When does that occur?
6:14 p.m. Central Time next Monday.
Oh, I'm not on then. Good. And where do I go to see it?
Don't you want to be on the air? We could do a live blow by blow. Or boom by boom.
I think I think that's the. I think Your Money Matters is on at that time, and not Your Planetary Defense Matters.
Oh, is that the Rick Edelman show?
No.
Yeah. Oh, it's one of the other guys. Okay. You can see it on space.com, and you can see it on NASA.gov, and probably a whole lot of other places. I'm sure there's going to be a bunch of people streaming it live on YouTube with commentary of varying degrees of accuracy.
And this is for the a key test of planetary defense. Man.
Yeah. So, you know,
saying that.
Doesn't it feel cool? I mean, yeah. It kind of makes your belt tighten a little bit, you know?
It makes it sound like we're going to be under attack, the planet. So we need defense.
Well, I mean, we kind of are. So there's a lot of, you know, our early solar system was just junk. You know, it was dust and
right.
ice and crud that started accreting into bigger masses, and they start banging into each other. And then you get this period called the late heavy bombardment, which you can see what that was doing. If you see pictures of the backside of the moon, it's covered with craters. Every surface,
right.
No matter how close you get, the craters just get smaller and smaller, but they're everywhere. So that's how much stuff was drifting around. So a lot of that's gone now because it either got swept away or accreted into other things. But there's still about 25,000 dangerous rocks and ice chunks that are crossing Earth orbit. And it could be a risk. So NASA, the Air Force, who do most of this, think they've found probably 90% of the really dangerous ones, but less than half of the smaller ones. And let's not forget, you know, that Chelyabinsk incident in Russia in 2013 that blew out all the windows and was like a small nuclear explosion. That thing was only 60 feet wide. So you start talking about these bigger rocks and you've got serious problems. So, For the really big,
No, I'm just going to say that's why you need a planetary defense. We're going to take a break and do more with Rod Pyle when we come back on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, John Aldecker at 820 with Rod Pyle, editor-in-chief of Ad Astro Magazine and host of This Week in Space podcast. So in the time remaining,
what
do we do? Are we going to do the Hubble? Are we going to do the Artemis, what are we going to do? There's so much space stuff going on, or not going on, as
there's
it were.
A lot. So let's do an update on Artemis, since it's kind of on everybody's mind. So we've had these two abortive attempts for various reasons. The first one, they thought one of the engines wasn't cooling down properly, but it turned out to be a bad sensor, which, you know, that's got to suck when you're a guy that realizes, shoot, it was just a you know, sensor. We could have gone.
That's like the pressure in my tires. If the sensors,
and, you know, with a newer car, if the temperature changes 8 degrees, you get in the car, it's like, oh my God, your tires are underinflated. And it's like, come on. So that's a very good analogy you made. And then the second launch attempt, they bypassed that sensor, said, okay, we got this figured out. Then they had a hydrogen leak because somehow we think through human error, this big 8-inch diameter pipe that fuels the hydrogen tank got overpressured and the seal got damaged. So they replaced that and they did a fueling test just yesterday, which worked. So we're thinking, you know, they're aiming for the 27th, but the Air Force still has not given them the sign off on what they call their flight termination system, which is explosives in the rocket. So that if it starts heading for downtown Miami by accident, they can blow it up and stop it. So that's battery powered. And for some weird reason that I have not been able to dig up, you have to return the rocket to the vehicle assembly building, the big vertical structure they got over there, which is a long trundle back down from the launch pad, to change the batteries. So NASA's been asking the Air Force for about 2.5 weeks, come on, can we go? And they're saying, we'll let you know. So for some reason, that hasn't happened yet. But we're looking at either the 27th, we hope, or October 2nd. If they do have to go back to the VAB, Vehicle Assembly Building, because of either the range safety system or the weather or something, it could be later in October, but maybe before Christmas.
Is there a little gamesmanship going on here between NASA and the Air Force? Is there a little hinky thing happening here? Is there some, stay in your own lane, you know, like stay in your own lane thing, you know?
This isn't responsible journalism, but I did hear a mutter that... So, you know, when I looked, that NASA said, okay, here's what we're going to do. And, you know, all we need is a sign-off from the Air Force.
Yeah.
I did hear some mutters the Air Force is going, way to call us out front and center, guys. Hmm. And, you know, I don't think they would delay it for that. I mean, they know what's at stake. They know there's a lot of money at stake here. I got to believe that there's people, you know, sitting down with a calculator seriously trying to figure out, okay, you know, let's look at the risk versus reward here and the performance of those batteries in the past. So part of it may be, you know, maybe that they're testing a parallel set of batteries to see how long they'll stay fully charged. Could be a lot of things.
We've been talking about this off and on for so long. Why don't we, could you restate what the mission is? What's the purpose of this launch? Oh, that. Yeah. Why
this is Artemis 1.
Yes.
It's the first flight of the Space Launch System, which is our big mega moon rocket that we've been fiddling with since about 2002 in one form or another. And atop it will be the Orion capsule, which is our capsule of choice for taking astronauts to the moon, not to the moon's surface, but to lunar orbit and someday beyond. And so this first flight will be 42 days because there's nobody on it. There's no crew. It'll be 42 days of going out in this big, weird swinging out beyond the moon orbit, going around the moon, and then coming back to Earth. So you're testing the rocket, of course. You're testing the life support system in the capsule. You're testing all the upper stages of the extra propulsion system the capsule has to boost it out towards the moon. And quite importantly, you're testing that reentry system because we haven't had a capsule coming back at return speeds, which are about 25,000 miles an hour. Wow. Since the 60s, 70s, early 70s.
Yeah.
And we don't make heat shields the same way we used to because it was a very environmentally nasty process. And NASA, being a government agency, they said, no, you have to use cleaner stuff. So they had some problems. They did test this capsule once just in Earth orbit in 2014. They had some cracking. So this is kind of critical to make sure that people will not cook when they're coming home.
Yes. Well, you know, hopefully this will happen because this is not the greatest publicity for the entire effort, whether it's NASA or whoever, that they keep rolling it out. Oops, there is a leak. Got to take it back in, roll it out. Oops, got to have new batteries, put it back in. I mean, it's not a big confidence builder, I got to tell you.
Yeah, and yet to be fair, you know, in the 60s when they were doing Apollo and the first couple flights of Saturn V, which they were spending about 10 times the money on, by the way, this is a bargain compared to the Saturn V.
Right.
When Apollo 4 flew, which is the first Saturn V flight with nobody on it, that was delayed 5 or 6 months for the same kind of reasons, leaks and problems. And that was the Saturn V, which was fueled with kerosene and liquid oxygen. This rocket, because the fuels have more energy, is carrying hydrogen, liquid oxygen, and part of the reason they're going through all this drama is hydrogen is really tough stuff to work with. Hydrogen atoms are really small, and they sneak out of everything. So if you have the slightest lack of a strong seal, it's going to go bink and come out because it's just, you know, a nucleus and an electron, right?
Right.
So it goes sneaking out there. So the leaks are a big deal. So, you know, as we often do in the United States, we don't use the rugged, tried and true. You know, the Russians would practically like slap together one of the T-72 tanks with a rocket and say, look, comrade, look how she fly. You know, we like to have clean, high tech.
Yes.
And so it's a big deal. But you're right. I mean, you know, Boeing's got to be really like crossing all toes and fingers and hoping because they built the rocket and Lockheed Martin built the capsule.
And of course, you know,
so we'll see.
We're referencing an era in history that was the quote-unquote space race, which was who gets up there first, because look at those Russians. They put, I forget the guy's name, Yuri Gagarin?
Oh, Yuri Gagarin,
wasn't that the guy's name?
Gagarin, 1961,
How could, you know, we've got to get there first. So any delay or whatever, it had a different aspect to it. You know what I'm saying? It was like, this is competition. We're going up against somebody. We're not really competing with anybody at this point, at least.
Well, not in the same way, but there is a sense that the Chinese are breathing down our necks.
That's true.
Well, they don't have a human spaceflight program. We don't anticipate them getting the moon before 2030 something. But there have been a lot of surprises in their program. And like the Soviet Union in the past, they're very quiet about things until they work.
Right.
So, you know, there are people in Congress that are thinking, we really better get back. And part of the problem here is, you know, we want to get to the moon this time, to stay and utilize the resources there so we can go beyond. So we've talked about that before. You know, liquid water, you can make rocket fuel and all that. You know, we have certain norms of behavior and legal regimes that we believe are best. The Chinese don't necessarily see it the same way. So there are some people that are concerned if they get there first, they're going to say, okay, this is ours.
Well, you know,
I've been
I've been stockpiling some dilithium crystals in my backyard in case anybody...
Hey, you cannot change the laws of physics, my friend.
Well, I'll be seeing you in the Delta Quadrant, Rod. Rod Pyle.
Oh, I'll be having John Delancey on my podcast in a couple of months. So I'm going to have to reach out to you again when that happens.
Absolutely. Got to. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, he was cool.
All right, thanks. Rod Pyle, as always, fantastic editor-in-chief at Astro Magazine and host of This Week in Space podcast. Plus, it gives me an opportunity to throw out a few of my Star Trek geeky expressions.